This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown has written a new book called Basic Brown, My Life and Our Times. It reads like a primer for aspiring politicians, with tips ranging from how to negotiate, how to deal with federal investigators, even how to dress.
As a male politician, you really should have the appropriate suit for the occasion. And whatever you do, don't let me see you in brown at night. That just doesn't work. Gray, a dark blue, can and should work. And don't let me see you on television with a polka dot tie in a plaid shirt. The camera hates those two items, and especially together. And for God's sake, don't just do what my many friends do, and that is go blue suit, white shirt, red tie. That is so nothing. Period.
The fact is, few people can pull off Willie Brown's fashion flash. He devotes several pages to his $6,000 suits, and few would dare copy his political style. Brown left the tiny town of Mineola, Texas, to become one of the most powerful and most flamboyant politicians in California. He was elected to the state assembly in 1964 and stayed there for more than 30 years, 15 as speaker. And he was the first black mayor of San Francisco. He's known as both a deal maker and a dandy, and Willie Brown never makes apologies for that.
I think that the business of living large is really who I am. I really enjoy my life, and I love sharing that joy with others. I must tell you, though, the openness and the clear absence of a demand for transparency serves you well in the political arena. It becomes literally the shield that carries you beyond the usual suspects as it relates to page 6 of the Post or any other gossip column, because what you see is what you get in a Willie Brown, and therefore there doesn't need to be any speculations about who he's with, what he's doing, what he's eating, where he's going, who he's seeing, or any of those things. He shows those to you and removes that as a potential liability and lets you move on to substance.
If we were to read this as a political primer, what is the most important lesson an aspiring young man or woman should take from this?
First and foremost, in this book, when you complete it, I think you will find that your life should not be taken so seriously that you attempt to be perfect at everything you do. Secondly, you must understand that in the world of politics, your views hold no more sway and have no more effectiveness than that which you're able to gather as a majority. And you find very quickly that means that you must tolerate different views, sometimes views that may prove to be better at building a consensus. Once you adjust to those kinds of realities, you're in a position where just maybe you can be a successful politician. From this book, that's the lesson you get.
You have a very interesting view of women in life and in politics. You seem to suggest that women are still pressing their foreheads against a cement ceiling.
Women are still, in this society, literally blocked by the rules, the regulations, the traditions, and the heritage of who we are as political types. Hillary, for an example, this is the first time in the history of this country that a woman has been near the nomination. You would think that in this nation that would not be the case, particularly since we now seem to have a number of women in governorships, in U.S. senatorships, in congressional seats. We have a female, first ever in the history of this country, female speaker of the House of Representatives, third in line for the presidency. But the numbers are diametrically far below where they should be, based on the population, based upon the training and the skills. And I say to you that when I have been in a position to select candidates, I've always thought women and racial minorities first, simply because the only way to actively break that ceiling is to eagerly and aggressively and affirmatively push for those who have been blocked by that ceiling.
So if you push for women and minorities first in selecting a candidate, you face quite a dilemma in this presidential race.
No question. It is an incredible dilemma, but a delightful dilemma.
Who are you supporting?
No one. I am in the business of analyzing and commentating and just having a ball doing it.
In your book, you talk about the barbershop test, that candidates of color have to wear power comfortably in the halls of power, that they also have to be able to go to the barbershop and pass that test there. They have to, as you say, when someone asks who was better, Mudcat Grant or Satchel Paige, you better know the answer. You have to know the music. You have to know the sports. In some ways, Barack Obama had that barbershop test recently when he stood at the podium and talked about race in America. And I'm wondering if you thought that, did he pass that test, if that was his moment?
He definitely passed that test. There are still questions in some people's mind, willing to give him the opportunity, frankly, when he's president, to prove that he's okay. But by virtue of what Jeremiah Wright, his pastor, had said, and by virtue of the incredible attacks PR-wise, it was necessary for him to go to the barbershop. And he went to the barbershop handsomely and aggressively.
Is a prolonged battle between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama good or bad for the Democratic Party?
It does not harm the Democratic Party. If that battle reduces itself to conditions where personalities rather than issues, and where the interests of the party takes a back seat to the ambitions of a single personality, it could be harmful. That is not the case, and I think it will only be good for Democrats.
Willie Brown, thank you very much for talking to us.
Michelle Nurse, nice to talk to you.
Willie Brown, his book is Basic Brown, My Life and Our Times. Like I said earlier, Willie Brown has some interesting views on women. He likes women a lot, and he's been married for more than 50 years. To read about his marriage and his social life, visit our website, npr.org.